ali pela porta para eles levarem a bagagem.
Dear colleagues, may we begin? Nem esse quem é que morre. Quem é que... So, dear colleagues, may we try to begin. We are at point 9.3 about the amendments to the IPU statutes and rules. And we have, may I say, three amendments. One proposal by the Executive Committee about the young MPs, the participation of young MPs. Other group is submitted by the IPU President, and the first one by the Russian Federation. So, and after it, you have a lot of sub-amendments, of course, but this is the amendments that we have. About the young MPs, before I give the floor to all of you, of course, about the young MPs, is not new. We have this a discussion about it in St. Petersburg, if you remember. And the proposal allows us to have to enlarge the delegation and to have more time to speak if includes in each delegation a young MP. The IPU presidents have amendments that we may put in three groups. One about the statute of IPU, other about the strategy of IPU, and finally the language. The Russian Federation is just about the language. So this is more or less the amendments that are presented. I know also that the President, Gabriela Cuevas, is available to be in our meeting in Geneva herself to present the amendments if you agree on that. So, you have the floor. Someone wish to talk about it? Kristen?
Are we talking about everything or only this to start with?
Of course, it's a methodology. We may separate, if you wish, we may not to put all the amendments together, but about the first one, about the youth participation. Someone wish to talk about it? No. Okay. I think it's specific. We go aware. So, the second group about the amendments presented by the IPU president. Someone wish to talk about it? Kristen?
Okay, I need to check so I say the right name. When we were in UN a week ago, I had a talk with Gabriela about this situation. I don't really like this at all, because as I understand it, it's a problem between two individuals. And that problem had started this way of solving it. And for me, it's not about Gabriella or Martin. It's not about the persons, the people. For me, it's about the organization. We should have statutes and rules that's working, not depending on who we elect. So I want to make that clear to start with. I don't have any problem at all changing the statutes and the rules if it is better for the organization. But I don't want to have new statutes and rules that makes it more difficult for the organization to work. So that's my main point. After that, I want to go into different suggestions. I hope you remember for an hour ago I talked about the strategy. I don't like a strategy that is 3 years. Why? I'm going back to myself. When I'm talking with the authorities in Sweden and try to make them to understand that IPU is a good organization, they are doing a good work, and we should contribute to them. We do it towards the strategy, not different programs. We give the money to the organization to make it possible for them to fulfill the strategy. We do it in the way that we are having a discussion about the strategy and if it works together with what my country wants to happen around the world. If it is a 3-year strategy, this will be, for us, it will be the end of a 3-year term of giving contributions. Because we need to see the strategy, we need to have the discussion, let us say it take half a year, something like that. Then we will have a decision, and suddenly it's something about 1 year, 1.5 year left on the strategy. So we can't give money on a long year term anymore. I want to have a 5-year strategy so we can work towards authorities to make it possible for a long term of voluntary funding. And what I mean with a long term, it's 3 years. So I think this is a bad, for us, it's a bad suggestion. The result will be that we can't give money in this way as we are doing today. And please remember, we give about 10% of today's budget to IPU. I just want to explain the problem that we are creating with this suggestion. I don't like that there are a suggestion that is talking about the precedent when it comes to the strategy. Because for me, it's not about the president. It's about the organization. So when the decision is supposed to be taken, it shouldn't be depending on when you are electing a new president. So I don't like that either. When it comes to responsibilities, that's the first problem again. Please don't make it more problematic for the organization to work. Because we do have an organization that we have an ex-com who are supposed to be working both before but also between meetings. They could give the opportunity and the responsibility to the president, to the vice president, and to the 6 vice presidents, how to manage this work. Don't make it more difficult for them to do that. Make it more easy instead. Not putting everything in these statutes and rules, because then you are binding them instead of helping them, in my opinion. So that's some opinions from me. So now, please, others.
Thank you very much. Margaret?
Mr. Chairman, dear colleagues, I was not in New York for those hearings, but I do share many of the comments of the previous speakers. As far as our position is concerned regarding these amendments, well, just like other delegations, we have sent a letter dated 14th February. It is found in your documents. The amendments proposed by the President, whom we do appreciate, these amendments have a strong impact on the future of IPU. And so just like my Swedish colleague, I think we should not make things more complicated, and it is not a matter of the persons. So I'm not getting into the subject, but just tell you about our recommendations about the procedure to be followed. And the Swiss delegation, given the diversity and impact of all these amendments and that were presented in the last day possible, we propose and we recommend that we make a recommendation by the 12 plus group, by this steering committee, again, to recommend to the executive committee to create a subcommittee constituted by representatives of all geopolitical groups. It can even be a rather small group, a rather small subcommittee, where representatives of the other committees, people that like to do this work, it can be legal experts or constitutional experts that have been appointed by the respective groups, would analyze until October, until next fall, these diversity, all this number of amendments and sub-amendments that we are being proposed now, so that they can analyze them in depth and see what the results are of this careful analysis. We'll present it, that a report to the executive committee in the fall. That is the procedure that we deem more cautious, more pragmatic. We have to be prudent. Let me just speak about the languages now. By raising the number of working languages, there are already cost estimations in the documentation that was presented. And if in the fall, in the October Assembly agrees on increasing the number of official languages, then that will have to be that implies that will have to be updated in the 2019 budget or the financial plan for 2020. So we have to do this carefully with creating a subcommittee of the executive committee. Thank you. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. I may say something. First of all, all our statutes, the amendments are presented with according with our statutes. 3 months before the assembly, so it's not on the last. We have time to read, to study, and to discuss it. 3 months before the assembly, and all members of IPU received the amendments and have time to present sub-amendments. If a delegation don't agree with something, it's time, because just 9 weeks before the deadline is 9 weeks before the assembly. So it's not something done by in clandestine way. It's very open how it was presented. But of course, the statutes, what the president proposed, I know that changed a lot the procedures of our institution, and I know it's not pacific. And that's why we have discussion here, and I think we'll discuss it again in Geneva and in the future. About the language, as a member of the president of the Portuguese delegation, I wrote to all parliaments and to all delegations itself, and also to all Portuguese ambassadors all over the world. Why? Because something. First of all, I think that we elect, and this letter is equal to all of your parliaments. It's the same. It's just an example. Why? First of all, the president, during her campaign, she said also at the 12 plus, I think that some of you have been there in St. Petersburg, when she told that she will propose it. So it's not something new, she told it. And she was elected with 80% of the votes. After it, we understand quite well that cost it's very important. And so, in the Executive Committee in Geneva, we make a transformation, may I say, with the Russian delegation. And so we forget the official language and we propose just working language. It's completely different. Because official language means that all documents should be translated. Working language is not about the translation of documents, about translation in websites and so on. It's just interpretation. So it's different. It's easy to understand that. But it remained the costs. Okay. And that's why we think about the rules, how to contract the service. Because as I like to work with figures and not just with words, we decide to ask for two different companies to give budgets to the program of in Geneva, for instance. We took the program next March in Geneva and we say, if we have this language, how much it will cost? With credential companies. And the bill is lower than what IPU is paying right now with less language. So if we wish to save money without the Portuguese, we may save money in Geneva in the next 3 weeks. It's possible to save money. It's just to contract, direct the service. And we did the same also with our 12 plus. In St. Petersburg, we paid 5,300 euros to IPU to have the French and English. Now we decide to contract directly. We will pay 2,000 euros. So it's possible, if we wish, to have more language and don't spend more money. Of course, I understand that if we will do the same thing as always, we will need more money. If we will contract the same teams and more for Portuguese, for instance, we will need more money. If we are available to change the way we contract the service, we'll save money. I understand quite well that it's better to do as always. As always. If we wish to be as always, of course, we need more money. Kristen?
For me, when it comes to translation, it's not only the money.
Translation or translation? Sorry.
Okay, both them. Both them. It's not only about money. For me, it's first thing is quality. Next thing, it's money. Because I don't want to travel with my delegation around the world paying millions each year and having a bad translation. I was in Buenos Aires in December. Not so good, but it was the host who gave us the translation. Not so good. So I want to be certain. So in my mind, if we want to do this, we talk about how to organize it first. Having a contract first to see what will happen if we change the system. I remember when we had the candidate then in our group. I asked her on our 12-plus group meeting how we were supposed to pay for more languages. She told me in my face that it will not be more expensive than today. Okay, deliver that first. Then I can accept the proposal. Because I want to see how it works before the decision comes. Because I don't want to have a lot of money spent on translations. I want to spend the money on activities. Activities that we have decided in the strategy. That's my main purpose when it comes to IPU. And I have seen this letter, and I can understand. I would like to have all the information in Swedish, if it was possible. It is possible, if we are prepared to pay for it on our own. So I wonder, and I can put a question to the chair now. I understand the arguments. How much are the Portuguese-speaking languages and countries prepared to pay for having this translation on their own? Because it's easy to ask for it if someone else pays. But if all six or eight countries, whatever, are prepared to say it and say that it's so important, how much are they prepared to pay for it to make it possible in Portuguese? Thank you.
I will give you an answer and then take the floor, please, because it's not to be a discussion between them. First of all, right now we are paying it, all the Portuguese countries. We have interpretation in Portuguese, and we make a quota for with we respect the GNP of each country. Of course, Brazil and Portugal pay much more than East Timor, and but we cover the costs ourselves. So we are paying right now. It's not a problem. But what we think, you have here one of the bets that we ask for, is that it's possible with some money and with the quality. Of course, quality is important. Of course, if I invite a friend from my from school or a neighbor to be interpreters, the quality maybe is not assured. But if we contract credential companies, the quality is assured, of course. And so that's why I think if we wish, is possible two things: to keep the same language, have quality, as and save money right now, or pay the same as we are paying now and have more language. It's possible if we contract directly. If IPU contract, if IPU go to the market, ask for proposals and did the job. If IPU did the same as always, and what do I know? They have two persons, and they ask these two persons, as always, to invite others to be part of the team. It's the way to do it. No one cares. No one cares. And we are paying it right now. But please take the floor. And this is not just that the amendments we have, right?
Yes. Yes, Chair. Dear colleagues, a lot of things have already been said. I have still some remarks. First of all, the Belgian delegation stands by the position it has taken in its national response to the proposals, and which is basically the same as that of most other delegations that have not presented sub-amendments but comments. Changes to the rules and certainly the statutes of our organisation require a large consensus. In these matters, text changes can only be the final stage of a discussion. We should first discuss the ideas one aims to implement and build consensus around that. The amendments were presented to us without any justification. And then, if we wanted to meet the deadline for submitting sub-amendments, we were obliged to do so before having had the chance to discuss the issues involved with our colleagues. The IPU president explained her motivation to me in New York, but all delegations are entitled to these explanations. If all the required discussions can be completed with a large consensus emerging before the end of the Assembly in Geneva, as the IPU president thinks, so much the better. The Belgian group does not want to postpone for the sake of postponing and will then be happy to vote in favour or against all remaining amendments and sub-amendments at the last Council meeting. But there is a real problem. A week looks long, but is not so long as we think. First, the geopolitical groups are only going to meet after the first meeting of the Executive Committee, so any conclusions at that first meeting of the Executive Committee will be indicative at best. Second, the geopolitical groups, supposing they arrive at firm conclusions, will not necessarily have identical views. A further compromise will then need to be found, either within the Executive Committee and at its meeting one day before last of the Assembly, which would be best, or by the geopolitical groups themselves. Then the compromise solution will need to be committed to paper in two languages, so it's clear to everyone what it is. Otherwise, the final Council session will be a complete chaos. And all this is supposing that everything in the compromise will be found somewhere in the amendments or sub-amendments that have been presented. Because, according to the rules, it is not possible,
even for the executive committee to come up with any new text if the decision is to be taken in Geneva. Judging from previous changes to the working methods of our organizations, that would be a miracle, but we can always try and hope. Then there is a problem of the personalization of the IPU strategy, and I don't open the floor here for the discussion between the President and the Secretary General. And the last thing I want to be too long is the question about the languages on our position, and now we have got a new document. I can say very clear that if the Belgian delegation have to pay more for whatever, I think it will not pass through the Parliament. Thank you.
David, please, take the floor. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, many of us were in Geneva for the last meetings. And I want to walk through the door that's been opened by my colleague from Sweden and from Belgium. Whether we like it or not, it appears as if the perception is that there's a major personality conflict between our President and our Secretary General, which is not good for the organization. And it's unfortunate. We have a very dynamic, energetic, young president. We have an experienced professional in our Secretary General. And for some reason, one reason or another, they don't appear to have been able to manage their relationship well. And that's unfortunate because, as I said, in Geneva, we live in a very, very competitive world. And the IPU has got to work very hard to reestablish its credibility. I know in Geneva, Robert mentioned the United Nations Parliamentary Assembly idea. I've since had a chance to get briefed at length on where that proposal is going or is not going as part of the United Nations 2020 reform package. One of the five key points is to create a whole new United Nations Parliamentary Assembly. We'll see. But on this, I'm with Margaret. I think we need to dial it down. We need to turn the volume down, and I think we need to slow it down just a little bit. When a donor country represented by Christer 10% of IPU says they may have a problem, we should listen, because that's a problem. I had our legal team in the House of Commons and the Senate go through all of the amendments, and some of them are pro forma. And you're right, Mr. Chair, they're all in order. They've all been tabled at the right time, or the sub-amendments, the right time. But I think we ought to work hard to avoid a crash in the meetings in Geneva, which cannot be good. Nothing good will come from this, except more division. So, for example, when there's talk of the young parliamentarians' amendments, fine, that's simple and seems to be easy to address. When we talk about the IPU's legal personality, our general counsel says, you don't have a problem with the IPU with your legal personality. You've been signing contracts forever. What is this actually trying to address? I don't know. On the other hand, the United Nations doesn't recognize the IPU as an international organization. Okay. When it comes to the role of the IPU president, these are really big changes. These are significantly altering the role, the statutory role of the IPU president. And this is causing just shaking up an existing order, you know? And so that's a little dangerous. But if the president is going to take on more day-to-day operations of the organization, that means a lot more time. It means staff for the president. It means more budget for travel for the president. It means the president is taking on more of the executive functions, which is traditionally set aside for the chief executive officer. Now, as Rabia pointed out in Geneva, one of the challenges we have is we have a two-headed governance system where both are elected by all of the member parliaments, which is an unusual creature because typically the CEO is recruited and an error perhaps, and interviewed and then appointed with a contract, with terms, etc. We don't have that. I'm of the view we need to slow this down a little bit. Not shelf it, not say that we're not going to address these important questions. But I think we need to take Margaret's wise counsel and look for a smaller working group. Because one of the things that happened in Geneva as well is the president made a very, very impassioned presentation for those who were not there, pages and pages and pages of overheads, putting out what I would describe as her aspirations for the organization. This is a good thing. It's a good thing. It's pulling us up and forward. But her aspirations, as they were laid out, did not take into account necessarily what the IP was already doing. We don't know how these can connect or not. And certainly the aspirations did not speak to the costs. Taking on more roles, taking on more representational work, training more parliamentarians, this has significant pecuniary consequences for the group. And as Kirster said many times, who's going to pay? Now, Mr. Chair, you talk about the language question. The Secretariat responds by saying the additional financial costs of the proposal are estimated at 3.5 million Swiss francs per year. I don't know whether to take that at face value or not. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but this is what the Secretariat, I believe, is responding with. At least that's what my team is telling me about. The additional costs. So I don't know whether that's true or not true, but I would be helpful to get a smaller group to tone this down and not take it into the assembly. And finally, I always want to put this out. When it comes to money and the costs and the things we want to do, an organization like the IPU, for any business, you really only have two choices. You either fight over getting a slice of pie in a pie of the existing and same size. That's option one. And option two is you agree to grow the pie and go out and get more revenues for the organization. And there are ways to do that. And I'm not sure what's being done right now at head office in terms of reaching out. I see some lists of some specific donations and programs. We talked a little bit about that in Geneva as well. Increasing the revenue sources. If you increase your revenue sources, well, then the costs for languages and interpretation become negligible, if you can. So my suggestion is that we take the advice of a number of countries who have sub-amended, who said, why don't we just sort of slow this down a bit, have a discussion, and not drive it to a decision point, which I don't think will be productive. I'm a little worried about what might come in Geneva. And those are my instinctual reflections, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Before I give the floor to Robert, just to say, the answer of the Secretary General about the 3,500,000 Swiss francs, two things. First, is if we accept the proposal of the President, Spanish, Arab, and Portuguese as official language, because if we have more three official language, is also the translation of all documents. That's why they talk about 3 million Swiss francs. But I think that this proposal is no one will support it. Because I think all of us, not just members of the 12 Plus, but all members of IPU, are not available to pay more to the IPU. That's why the sub-amendment that we have right on the table is not official language, but working language. And we have now Arab and Spanish as working language, so it's just the Portuguese, the difference from the present statute. So we will keep French and English official language, translation and interpretation. We have the Spanish and Arab right now with working language. We'll put Portuguese also working language. So we never we talk about 3 million euros about it. And that's why we try to prove with this kind of proposals that it's possible to have one more working language, Portuguese, Swedish, or other language, without increasing the costs. It's possible. Of course, if it's better to test it, I agree on that. That's why we ask for proposals. But if you create a subcommittee may also to study and make ask for proposals about it to be sure that it is possible to have one more working language without rising the expenses. It's something that is better, for instance, to be sure before we make a decision, as Christian said. But Robert, please.
Well, a lot of things have been said. I would like to go back. Well, we have first put aside the problems. Let's look at it like that. So the problem is that the IPU people one day made a decision in the executive committee. I was part of the executive committee, and I voted against it. So I am at peace. But I think it was a mistake when we decided that we should vote for the Secretary General. I think this is contrary to most other parliaments. We all have in our respective parliaments secretary generals or someone who is not elected, is appointed, is proposed by the president, and it is appointed by the bureau. And he is responsible or reports to, he or she reports to the parliamentarians as a CEO. And I think this works well in other parliaments. And in parallel to the IPU, we have the meeting of the secretary generals. We do have the secretary generals that meet in parallel at the IPU meetings. Maybe some of you do not know about this, but there is a meeting of secretary generals. And in my opinion, the secretary general of the IPU should also participate in the in this meeting, because it is an administrative role. They are not elected, and the decisions we make ourselves are decisions made by elected parliamentarians. So we have given this power to the secretary general, and that was, in my view, a mistake in terms of functioning. The Secretary General is elected by the General Assembly with more votes than the President sometimes, and he feels, and I understand, he feels that he has been elected. Well, he did, he was elected, and he's responsible to the people that have elected them, just like we are towards our voters, so our constituents. So I understand his position. I was elected. I have to report to the other parliamentarians, and therefore I should. I think I should have several powers to do my job. Now we have to keep the common sense, and we know that sometimes things do not work very well between two people. All of us have had these kind of issues with our friends and associates and colleagues, so we have to learn how to work together. I am convinced that even if there have been some clashes, so to speak, between the Secretary General and the President, I am sure that this will be sorted out when they learn to work together. I don't think that we should be very much concerned about this. I'm sure that it will not last three years, this conflict. Now, it is up to us to, because we are responsible, to make sure that things go well. We have to tell them to, you must come to agreement, to an agreement. We have a certain responsibility here. Now, I think things can go well, and we should not forget that the Secretary General has been elected for 5 years, so he will have 5 years. He will be throughout all this time there, and he wants for things to go well for IPU and to have a good relationship with us as well, not just with the President. That's important too. So this is the first thing I'd like to say. The second thing I'd like to say is that I believe we have also a responsibility towards the whole group of 12+, not just the representatives that are here today. There must be a global agreement of the 12+. If I see what is going on, I think that we have to find a consensus. Well, we will never come to an agreement on all points. We have to come to a consensus to accept a minimum level that is acceptable by everyone. I think, President, that you have a role to play there to advocate the position of the 12+. We agree with the President, but we have to explain to her that the 12+, it is not just one person, it's many people, and we have to come to a consensus to explain this to the President, and I think this can work well as well. Yes, there are amendments that we do not agree about, there are amendments that can be changed, there are things that are arguable. I think it was David that said, spoke of the legal person. Yes, but we have to be precise because the text is not very clear. The legal personality to sign international agreements. Now, if we stick to these words, it has it's an important scope. It's a broad scope. What is an international agreement? We can sign international agreements with a country that will entail responsibilities. I'm just going to say something stupid, but let's say we sign an agreement with North Korea because we think it's nice to foster democracy in North Korea. Will this be good for the communication of IPU in the world? I think we have to be very careful about this. International agreement should not entail a responsibility. I'm not talking about financial commitments. We can have international agreements that entail financial commitments. So we have to be prudent, but we have to specify what are these international agreements about. So I know further ahead it is specified, but we should make it clear from the outset, from the beginning. It should be limited to certain international agreements with international organizations, but there should be a limit there. In the last meeting of the Executive Committee, the President mentioned the future of IPU as an international organization. Or not, or non-governmental, NGO, whatever. So we were asked, Konstantin Konstantchev and myself, we were asked to prepare a paper. We are now just concluding it, and we will send it to you so that you can take a look and give us your opinion. It is what we tried to do was is a balanced document, and it will allow you to see how we see this. But then you will make a decision. But how we see the representation of IPU. Chair, I continue. I just like to make this clear. The amendments, we can discuss them. I agree with Margaret. We have to make sure that we're not adopting something immediately that will, in the future, raise an issue. I don't want to make the same mistake as we made when we decided to vote for the Secretary General. So we have to take some time to study all this But that's the work of the president also to see that there is a consensus in the 12 plus, even if everybody does not agree, but we try to come to a consensus. I'm sure that you'll be able to help us get there. Now, the languages, and I will end with the languages issue. Let me make some things more clear about how the functioning of IPU. Or the choice of languages. I'm not talking about the price. The price, we know it. It is true that those 3.5 million budget or extra, it's in translation or translators, interpreters, it's the bulk figure that we are using here to say it's not possible. Let's not discuss it. No, we have to discuss that. And the work of the group is important there. Now, a few precisions. How does this work right now at the IPU? Christer also knows some of it. The price is set by the IPU. Wait. I will explain. As soon as I'm able to put my glasses on. So, okay, I got it. Don't make fun of me. So, let me explain. The IPU sets the price. And how does the IPU set the price? Well, it takes the price of Geneva, of the interpreters, of the International Association of Conference Interpreters. There is an association in Geneva that gathers all interpreters. And I know that what I once, when I was Prince of the 12 Plus, because I needed interpretation and IPU did not have that service, I asked for an interpretation and I fought for having interpreters that were not members of this association. And the president called me on the phone saying that I was not being democratic at all. I was going against the trade unions, against the social aid, whatever. I was very, very criticized. Well, I have a thick skin, so I know it's less expensive, but they said no. Well, in Geneva, there is this syndicate for the interpreters is very strong. But IPU sets a price below the official price. IPU pays slightly less than the other international organizations pay in Geneva. So, they have two recruiters that go and look for the capable interpreters. Well, they use a list of the of that association. So based on that list, they recruit the interpreters to work for IPU. Based on that, then they sign a contract, and the contract obliges the interpreters to observe several things: the working hours, for instance, including extra hours. Well, there are certain conditions, yes, but that happens also in other realms. And the contract specifies the conditions that these interpreters are obliged to observe. And so they are called when they have a conference to say, you work this on this or that date and you'll pay that much by the IPU. This contract, this agreement is not does not apply to the cities abroad. So the IPU can, and it does sometimes, the resort to interpreters, local interpreters when it is abroad. And that opens the door to many possibilities. For instance, if we find companies abroad that can do the work, provide this service abroad, no problem. But I just like to tell you about these specifications that are important to you. So, bound to the work abroad. A price set by the IPU in Geneva, which is below the usual tariffs. But I'm sure that interpreters, that they make sure that the contract will last some time. So that's why they accept a lower price. That's what I want you to say. And to be even more precise, they hire trilingual interpreters. That is the condition which is specified in the contract. Then it's up to us to decide. Everything can be decided, and we'll see how what we can do to work better. We're not paying much more because to find more money, given the budget, the ordinary budget, will be difficult. And we cannot commit to make decisions for the future based on a financial commitment for languages, for budgets that is not the ordinary budget. It would be risky to make this commitment because some countries will give money saying, yes, I'm going to pay, I give you this much, and then in 1 or 2 years we won't have that money because the parliament will not give it again because they may no longer have the means. Our promises only concern those that make them, and so we cannot ensure the future. Now, as for the rest, Mr. Chairman, we have already seen what is not working, so let's try to find solutions to these problems. Let's try to come to a consensus of the 12 plus, and I think this is very important. I think that in Geneva we must come to a consensus because we know that then when there are subjects on which the 12 plus group has not come to an agreement, this always leads to bad results. And Chris is right, we are responsible for the future of the organization. I'm not going to renew my mandate as a senator. It will end in 2.5 years. But after having spent more than 22 years dealing with IPU issues, I wanted to work in the future, and that is why I am so much engaged in trying to find a solution. I took some time, but I think it was important to precise this situation.
Thank you very much, Robert. I ask someone who wishes to take the floor. I may say that, as David said, before our meeting of the 12 plus will be the meeting of the Executive Committee. And you members of the Executive Committee will discuss it before the 12 plus. When we will have our first meeting, we hope to receive something of your effort inside the Executive Committee. It's in your hands, more than ours, 12 plus. And we have 4 members there and here that are members of the Executive Committee. Someone wishes to take the... it's you? Please. Edge, please.
Thank you so much. I would like to start to say that I've been listening a lot of all the experience that a lot of members in here have. But I also have to say that when we were in Geneva in March, I listened carefully to what Ms. Gabriella said. What's her motivation for the different stuff that we have in the table now. And I think there is missing a part of that discussion, and I would like to take this into this room, because she talked a lot about what would we like IPU to be in the future on. Should it be differently for how we work today? And I think one of her biggest motivation for asking us about that was that how can we make sure that IPU is relevant for the future, that our colleagues back home knows what we are working with, how we are working, and be more transparent. How to engage more young parliamentarians, and at least how to make sure that we are not leaving mostly all the women behind. I said in Geneva that I support her initiative, and Norway will do that in the future. But I see also a lot of challenges in what way of making those suggestions also in the financial way of doing it. And I agree with my Swedish colleague, Christer, that I think we could have said yes to many things if we have known how it will be financially. But I strongly will say loud that I will support her initiative. I think she is actually doing something very good for the future on. And I don't think we can make a conclusion here, but I think that all the members of the ExCom have heard what has been told around the table, and I think we're also going to have some good discussions in Geneva on the in a few days, a few weeks. And what my Canadian colleagues said in Geneva, I'm not afraid of if UN will make a new organization with parliamentarians. There is not too many organizations working for peace and democracy in the world. And I think they're going to do it. They're probably going to do it, because that's a part of the reform. But then it's even more important that we make sure that we are relevant for the future. What should we do? What should the General Secretary do? What should the President do? What should ExCom do? And so on. So my suggestion is, of course, that Ms. Gabriella meet 12 plus in Geneva, make sure that she is prepared because of this discussion, because I think it's the same discussion we will have, and that we meet her with an open mind about what is her motivation for doing this. Thank you.
Krista, please.
In one point, I disagree a little with my Norwegian colleague, and that is when we are talking about the parliamentaric organization in UN. I'm not afraid of that, but I want to know what kind of parliamentaric organization, because if it is an organization that that will have responsibilities and taking decisions, that could be, and now I go to myself, that could be a problem with our Swedish constitution. If IPU then built up an organization in that way, we can't be members of IPU anymore, because it's the government in our constitution that have that responsibility, and I am not sure if our parliament will vote for a change in the constitution so we can still be a member of IPU. But this is a new old discussion that we have had a couple of years ago, and I think we should have that. It should be a discussion even in the future, but we need to be very careful, because I know we are not the only parliament in the world that are in the same position, and we have decided that we will not accept an organization in IPU that make us a second grade of a member. If we are supposed to be here, we will have the full strength in our membership. So think of that when you're talking about our relations with the UN. It could be a good thing, and it could be very bad.
Thank you. Of course, we will wait the results of the executive committee, but I may say also that we know that, of course, we have a conflict. Everyone knows this is a conflict between Gabriela Cuevas, our president, and the secretary general. But we know what are the motivation of the president. She's She thinks that if you are a parliamentarian organization, it needs to be ruled by a parliamentarian. And who represents the institution should be a parliamentarian, for instance. And if, for instance, if the president is not available to be somewhere, should be the vice president that represents the institution, because he's a parliamentarian from Russia or from France or from somewhere, and not the secretary general, because the secretary general is not a parliamentarian. Of course, we need more. If we need this kind of transformation, we need to have more meetings of the executive committee. Because, for instance, I saw from my eyes, with my eyes, that when the service of IPU gave to the president the terms that for the next assembly, without asking anyone, they decide that the next conference in the next assembly, the main thing to the General Assembly should be science. And she said, it was a conversation, I have been present, and she said, who decides? Executive Committee decide that should be science? No, I propose it, because I think it's what is important to discuss. And she said, I will not accept it. I will propose migrations, because I think it's much more important right now to discuss migrations than science. And so, this is the kind of thing, for instance, that should be, for instance, not a decision of the president, but a decision of the executive committee. So the executive committee needs to have more meetings, just not twice per year, but in the middle time between assemblies to take this kind of decisions. If the executive committee meets between assemblies and take these decisions, the decisions will be taken by parliamentarians. The president will not vote at the executive committee. So it will not be a personal decision, but a decision of the executive committee. But it will not be also a decision of the secretary general. And that's why I think we need to change a little bit how we work. Because if we are parliamentarians, the parliamentarians should decide what is our rule, what is our way, what we will discuss, how which persons we will invite to the meetings, which kind of meetings we will do it, and so on. Of course, then the implementations should be the service, because no one... we have members of the executive committee, but you need to work in your own parliaments, in your districts. You are not available to be in Geneva, and the president are not available to be in Geneva as well. But the decisions should be taken by the executive committee, and that's why I think this is what is in their mind. But I think that, I agree, many times we need not to decide very, very quickly, because we need to convince our colleagues that it's not a war, but it's a way to improve the organization. And if we need time to prove it, give the time to prove it, because the organization will still alive after Gabriela Cuevas left the job. After we left the job, and we think we wish the best to the IPU. Robert, you ask the floor, please.
I don't like to keep talking about my past, but there are four meetings of the executive committee per year. One that can take place before the assembly, but between the two assemblies, there is all this time that the world is forgotten by the parliamentarians, because we make our decisions in Geneva that we maybe are not informed about it, and well, not before. And then we are just informed that we have asked for the information. We are told that this decision has been made. Now, I think that we needed at least four meetings of the executive committee per year, because two are always take place before the assembly. That changes nothing because it's just 2 days before. So between the two assemblies, there should be two meetings of the exec committee. We made a study at the time to see how much this would cost. It's not that much. There is no need for a room. It takes place at the headquarters. The staff is there. Well, we have to pay for a certain interpreter, but it's not the whole language combination. So it's quite easy and not very expensive. And then main expenditure is to the parliament that send people there. So it's, financially speaking, it's feasible. And I think this would be very useful to follow what is going on and to make decisions and influence the decisions in a good way. Thank you.
On n'a pas besoin de changer les statuts pour ce type de choses. Il faut tout simplement améliorer la manière dont cela fonctionne. Peut-être que lors de la prochaine réunion du comité exécutif, une personne parmi vous pourrait le proposer. Et après, on décidera. Est-ce que l'on peut avancer? Merci. Donc maintenant, nous allons passer au prochain point. Nous n'avons pas encore reçu d'informations officielles de la part de l'UIP. On ne sait pas, par exemple, si certains de nos collègues ne sont pas membres ou sont encore des membres parlementaires. Parce que parfois, cela arrive. Ce que l'on a maintenant, ce sont les mandats qui termineront fin mars. Pour le bureau du premier comité, il y a deux sièges pour le 12 plus, deux places. Pour le deuxième comité, deux places. Pour le premier comité, deux places. Et pour le quatrième comité, une place. En ce qui concerne les questions liées au Moyen-Orient, une place. Bureau des femmes parlementaires, une place. Jusqu'à maintenant, nous avons reçu de la part de l'Espagne. Ils sont disponibles pour être membres du premier comité. Pour être occupé l'un de ces places qui est disponible. Nous avons donc 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9 places disponibles sur les 12. Si quelqu'un n'est pas membre ou est encore membre du Parlement, eh bien il y aura davantage de places dont on discutera. Madame Locatelli, vous avez demandé la parole.
I did not put my candidacy for this term of Parliament, so in 6 months, I have a prorogatio for 6 months, and then I will leave.
Okay. So it will not be in March, but in...
It will be around September, October.
Next October, also to the Bureau of Union Parliamentarians, will be one more place. So this is what we have until now. Okay. Point. Someone wish to take the floor? I may repeat. To the Bureau of Women Parliamentarian, one. And Middle East questions, one. Young parliamentarian, no places are available for the 12 plus. Point 10. To the Assembly. Emergency items. Until now, we didn't receive anything. But I think that Syria, for instance, is an item that some of us should present. What happened there is awful, completely awful. But I don't know. Do you want? Margaret, take the floor. It seems to me.
Well, it's my personal opinion. I think I cannot force my delegation into anything, but what is happening in Syria is getting worse and worse, and so we have to put that as one emergency item for sure. Well, I'm a member of the Civil Rights Committee, and for the moment we are at a standstill, meaning that the purpose was to make proposals. At our level, the level of parliamentarians, it's not very high regarding what is happening in Syria, because that's where the politicians and the military are those that are doing the talk there. So when we decided to create this committee, well, it was a time when things calmed down, and it was maybe possible to think that we might convince the Syrians into going towards a more democratic and acceptable situation. So the idea was to tell the Syrians, and after speaking to several people, including Stefan de Moussois, he was the United Nations envoy to try to find a solution, and he advised us to try to meet the people in the region, the opposition, and the Syrian government representatives to try to see, well, this is futurology, but to try to see if we could explain to the Syrians that they have to change their constitution and have elections, hold elections. They need an election law. These were this was quite ambitious, because President Assad himself does not want to change the constitution. He does not want to hold elections at the moment. And he feels comfortable because he thinks he has won the war. And he has won the war because Daesh is no longer important, ISIS is no longer important. Well, he didn't win the war himself. It was the Russian air raids mainly. The Kurds, also the allied forces, the French and other and their allies in this coalition against ISIS. And Assad now says, I won the war, so anything you can try to make me accept anything more democratic at the local level, I will decide. And I'm in charge. Now, we cannot try to meet these responsible people in Syria, because our chief and the president, our president, wanted to send a mission to Syria after our meeting in Geneva of the Executive Committee, but they did not get an answer, and they have not been invited to go. So under these conditions, the Syria Committee is at a standstill, and it is at a standstill because the military and political situation in the country has evolved to such an extent that Assad still thinks he has won the war, but it's in the short term, because the opposition is still buying arms, and the war will continue under the form of guerrilla in the future, and then the Assad soldiers will reply with everything they have at their reach, including chemical weapons. Now, at our level, the politicians can not do anything. The army is not able to do anything because Assad is still in charge. But Syria is a country that is totally destroyed. The infrastructures, everything is destroyed. We need $500 billion, and no one is willing to give money. The Russian minister said, "We don't. The Russians. We don't have any money to give." We cannot. We don't have any money to give. The Americans, of course, they will not give anything until they there is something similar to democracy in the country, which will take longer or a long time. And then the Europeans say, we're not going to give money until we are sure that Assad is not going to go away and there will be a government. So that's the state of play. The parliamentarians of Syria are still members of the IPU. In Russia, we have met, we had these clashes even in the plenary session that even caused some uproar. But again, if we said if we're not invited, we don't go. That's our conditions. What can we do? We don't want to intervene in the military and political area. We are just, all we can say is that the IPU is available for any future elections and such. So stand still now. In this Syria committee. Now it's mandatory vacation. We will meet again and see if things have changed. Maybe at the dates of the General Assembly, we may meet Syrian parliamentarians. Some countries are still hesitating, such as Saudi Arabia, and Iran is in favor because it's also a member of the committee. But we have to be cautious about our parliamentarian capacities to move in these muddy waters. The ambition is welcome, but we have to be careful. I was asked for my opinion. This is my opinion.
But I think that what Margaret and myself said is about the emergency item. Because what happened in Ghouta, for instance, we have a decision, a resolution approved at the United Nations Security Council, asking for a break for humanitarian reasons, for instance, and no one take care of it. And so, if you have an emergency item, is there something about? I don't know if in 3 weeks. It keeps the importance as we have now. Emergency item should be something important on that moment, not something that we'll discuss always. So it's better to wait, of course, and to wait for the date before the meeting to decide. But if you keep what happened, in our reality, what happened in Ghouta, I don't know, if we close our eyes and we will discuss other matters and forget the people that are dying right now there. It's something different, not the Syria problem at all, as a whole, but, for instance, the implementation of a resolution of the approved by the Security Council of the United Nations. It's something different.
Well, the idea to have an emergency item on Syria, of course. I think that we can all agree on that. But experience tells me, and those of you that were in the drafting committee of IPU's emergency items, I wish you good luck in trying to find a draft that is, I won't even say adopted, but discussable, because there will be comments and coming from all sides. Everyone will want to be in the drafting committee. All groups of all geopolitical groups. You'll have the Iranians, of course. You'll have the Saudis, also the Lebanese. In my opinion, I may be wrong, but I think it will be extremely difficult to come to a resolution that is meaningful. If it's just a resolution to say that the IPU wants for the Security Council resolution be absurd for the humanitarian relief. Yes, but that's maybe all we can get after all the worries. I don't think we can go much further than that. But why not? Why not? Then again, I don't even mind to be in the drafting committee and struggle for a good resolution, but it will be very difficult, very difficult. And the result, the final result, will probably be frustrating. Now, what IPU can really do is a declaration, come up with a statement from the president with the on the situation in Syria, and asking on behalf of IPU for the respect of the resolution, all that. And this is important, it's feasible, and it will allow IPU to take a stance on this issue better than a resolution on an emergency item that will entail a lot of struggle but little impact in the end. So as far as IPU is concerned, a press release, a statement might be feasible and more positive. It is just a proposal, but if you want to have an emergency item, well, emergency items will have to be voted, as you know, and many countries are against. There will be countries. You see, when we vote the emergency items, and countries will say no because it has implications and so on and so forth. So you'll see. You'll see. I've been there, done that. So it will be a week's work and very little results.
What kind of emergency items will be presented? Until now, we will not have anything. And, of course, the Executive Committee will have the meeting before, and we will wait for it. Committee meetings. We have just met, just have documents about the two committees, the same committee on peace and international security, and the other one about sustainable development, finance and trade. And we have two co-reporters and draft resolutions from the 12 plus. At the first committee is Mr. Caroni from Switzerland. I don't know if Margaret knows something about it, if you talk with your colleague, or if someone, if we don't have any information, we will go forward.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I did not prepare anything for this resolution to be presented. My colleague Caroni and another parliamentarian in this committee. As far as I know, this draft underwent a long preparation, a lengthy preparation. I am sure other colleagues present here may be more aware of it. I suppose there have been hearings, experts have been invited by these two parliamentarians that have prepared this report. So, as far as I know, so far, the reactions, the context of that first committee were positive. Now, it remains to be seen the amendments that will be presented in the deadlines. Thank you. The other committee, Christo.
There will be a new decision for the new subject for the first committee also. And we have a proposal that we are discussing with the Secretariat. And our proposal is combating sexual violence in UN peacekeeping missions and beyond. So we will see if this will be a new item for the 2019.
I remember it was presented a year ago, and the bureau of the committee said it's important, and, but they will discuss this theme, but it will be in at the agenda. So I think you may support your position to be to the next agenda of the first committee. I saw consensus about it. Standing Committee Sustainable Development. We have a co-reporter from Belgium. If you have something to talk about it, about some resistance or about a consensus about the draft resolution.
I've heard from my colleague that everything is going well with his Vietnamese colleague and that we can end that discussion.
So it's easy. I always remember the debate of the first committee in Dhaka because it was not easy that time. But now it's more easy, the draft resolutions of in our committees. At the other committees, if you wish to take the floor, Christer.
Yes, on the third committee, we have had a discussion in our delegation about what happened in St. Petersburg. We have sent a letter to the Secretariat and the President, and we have also sent it to our members in the XCOM, because those of us that were on this committee meeting were upset about how people in the committee behaved when it comes to the discussion about LGBTQ people. There were shouts and screaming and so on. I wasn't there, but they have told me this. And if we can't have a democratic discussion in IPU, so people are supposed to be shouted at because they have an opinion, it doesn't feel good. We haven't had any answer yet from the Secretariat about this, but I think it's very serious if you are not allowed to have an opinion. Thank you.
Before, I think we have worse than that. Because we have, I am not member of the committee, but I still at assembly when the president of the committee announced the decisions of the committee, and we have the same problem at the plenary with people screaming. It was awful, and the plenary take a decision that I don't know if it's supported by in our statutes, but because the plenary at assembly asked to the committee to think again if the committee will maintain the decision to have a debate about this kind of items, because the decision is a decision of committee. I think that the plenary has not the power to discuss the decision of the committee. May approve the results, the draft resolutions and so on, to adopt the resolution, but not discuss the decision that the committee take before. But after the discussion, and a lot of members of our parliament are not still at assembly because the delay of the works in our last day. I remember that our colleague Lacão from the Portuguese Parliament, he talked about it against the decision that is be taken by the plenary, but the majority there decide to ask the committee to think of, to drop off this issue from the agenda in Geneva and to think again about it. And I think that our statutes did not allow us. Maybe the president didn't respect the recommendation of the plenary. But Belgium, please.
I'm not going to repeat the whole story. It was terrible what has happened there. We were flabbergasted and say what's going on now. Now we have asked at the committee secretariat what kind of debate we can have in Geneva. They have sent us a long letter with all kind of argumentations or notifications. I gather from this that it's not certain that a clear distinction will be made between the preliminary question, I quote, should we accept the Belgian proposal and consequently have a debate on the LGBTI issue, close the end of quote, on the one hand, and the substantive questions of this discrimination against LGBTI people itself on the other hand. My guess is that since the issue is already on the agenda, albeit in a non-conventional form, the committee president will not want to clearly separate the two questions, and people in their interventions will address them together, which means that one of the scenarios they propose, and I read it, it may be that simply by expressing their views at the session in March on the proposal, members feel that this session in March has been sufficient for placing the issue on the IPU's record, and it's no longer relevant to have a separate committee agenda item at the next assembly. For this to happen, the proponent of the proposal would have to withdraw it formally. End of quote. So we should make the most of the opportunity we get in Geneva. And since the Belgian delegation will be asked to start the debate by presenting its proposal again, we will take this into account and give a more elaborate presentation than we did in St. Petersburg, in which we will talk also about a substantive issue and not just about why we should discuss this in the IPU. And I want to take this opportunity, Chair, to call for as many 12-plus delegations as possible to be present at the debate and to take the floor to support a proposal and speak out about the many aspects of violence and discrimination against LGBTI and about what we as parliamentarians can do about it.
Thank you. Of course, we'll discuss this on our first meeting in Geneva. Before the meetings of assemblies and committees, to ask this to our colleagues to be present and to decide. But I think that we have also something that you need to discuss. So, if a group do not agree with a decision of one committee, this group can appeal to the assembly and to have a second term, a second discussion. It will be now forever this kind of procedure, because it's something new. I do not remember something like this. But if is for the future, you will know it's a new rule, and we didn't change the statutes, but we have a new rule. If we don't agree, we'll go to the plenary assembly to ask to have a second votation, and we'll try to change the result, because I don't like the results of the first time. But
I'm not so old in this organization, but it's not a rule. It was the of Russian course. President, see, who said we do it like that. The assembly has said it's like that, and it was over the story. It's yes. Not correct.
Yes, because the discussion is so bad and so ugly that she tried to end it, of course. She tried to end the discussion because some countries from Africa and from Arab countries did something not nice. David, please. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, I wanted to raise one important issue that you should be aware of if you're not aware of. And this is pursuant to the announcement that a high-level advisory group on counterterrorism was being created for under the auspices of the IPU and the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. So there is a list of membership now. I am a member of this advisory group. Margaret is a member of the advisory group. I think also vice chair. While in Geneva, something unusual occurred. In a very quick moment, the executive committee seems to have approved the addition of a number of country representatives to this high-level advisory group on countering terrorism and violent extremism. And two other countries were allowed to join. One was Iran, and the other was Algeria. Now, since that moment, there has been quite a reaction amongst 12-plus members. I've spoken to Margaret, I've spoken to our Australian counterpart, I've heard from New Zealand, I've heard from the American ambassador in Ottawa, I've heard from the Israeli ambassador in Canada. The Israeli speaker of the Knesset has written a letter to our president, Gabriela Cuevas, asking how this could possibly be. This is a very controversial matter now, and I wanted to table it and get your reaction, perhaps your advice on how we might proceed, if proceed at all. My own government has withdrawn any further consideration of support for this high-level group as a result of Iran sitting on this group. At one point, our government was considering funding the initiative. Now they have completely withdrawn. Our Prime Minister made a very powerful statement in the House of Commons just a month ago on the Iranian situation. I had our legal team go back and do a quick review of where Iran now sits globally on this question of as a state sponsor of terrorism, whether it's the United States, Canada, the European Union, and many of our own countries here, the general conclusion is that Iran is the single biggest state sponsor of terrorism in the world today. And so the challenge we now have as a 12-plus group is what we can or cannot do about this. The Australian Speaker of the Senate, Scott Ryan, with whom I spoke just Friday, last week, on the way over here, said he's looking for some sort of mechanism through which the Secretary General or the President can revisit this decision and have Iran removed from this working group. It's really serious. It's a story. It's a front page story waiting to happen. I haven't been contacted by anyone else. The Jerusalem Post has held back the story, but I fully expect the New York Times will run the story. And the question is whether or not we want to say something as a 12-plus executive committee in advance of the executive committee meeting at its next meeting. There is more than ample evidence everywhere about Iran's role, whether it's through its Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the Quds Force, in funding the Taliban, Lebanon's Hezbollah, Hamas, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, its general command. It is funding Hezbollah directly. It is considered to be the virtual arm of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps. It's providing arms and money to Hamas. It has been involved in a series of bombings, including the 2000 bombing of the USS Cole, directly involved in the World Trade Center and Pentagon attacks of 11 September 2001, and in a foiled plot to bomb the New York subway system in 2009. All of this is available for your consideration on the United States State Department's designation as Iran being a state sponsor of terrorism since 1984. There are only three other countries on that list: North Korea, Sudan, and Syria. So the question, Mr. Chair, for consideration today is what we can or cannot do about this. I'm told there's a mechanism by which the Secretary General and the President can reopen this question at the Executive Committee of the IPU writ large in Geneva. But I fear that this is highly problematic. The United Arab Emirates is funding this initiative, Mr. Chair, at this point. I think they're in for perhaps $1 million, or I don't know the exact number in terms of how much they're funding. I know at one point the UAE government wanted to fund the entire initiative, and then the Secretary General was cautioned by a number of members this would be a very big error to have everything funded by just one country, and that they should look to get a series of countries to support. So I wanted to raise it with you, Chair, and I'm Speaker of the Knesset has written a letter to the President of the IPU. The Israeli ambassadors around the world are moving to lobby different individuals, you, for example, Mr. Chair, myself. And so I wanted to raise it and table it for consideration and debate.
It's a very sensitive question. Because we know that the decision to invite countries to be member of this group is a decision of the Executive Committee. It was a decision of the Executive Committee. So if I'm wrong, please correct me, because it's important to have all the information. Margaret, please.
Yes. Well, it is true, as David just said, that Monday, February 5, after our meeting of the executive committee, this advisory group on the fight against terrorism held a meeting on that Monday. The group is constituted and elected Dr. Al-Kubaisi from the Abu Dhabi president of this group, chairperson of that group, and myself as vice president or vice chairman. Now, regarding the composition, the membership of the of Iran or Iranian parliamentarians, as far as I remember, in this first meeting, on the 3 and 4 of February in Geneva, there were the four members present here and the chairman, Duarte Pacheco, the Iranian members, Mr. Al-Ali, that has been for some time in the executive committee, said in that meeting, as far as I remember, during the meeting of the executive committee and in the presence, if I'm not wrong, of the president of IPU, Gabriela Cuevas Barón, that he said that Iran, his himself, Mr. Halali, was a member of COMEX and therefore should in all cases be a member of that group, of that working group against terrorism. As far as I remember, there was not a discussion. We just went on with the next item on the agenda. Next Monday, we met again at 10 a.m. for the first session of these 2 days advisory, high-level advisory group on the fight against terrorism to decide on the rules and all that. And Mr. Al-Ali was there. Mr. Al-Ali, Iranian representative, was there in the same seat that he was on Saturday and Sunday for the executive committee. Well, he just sat there. So that is how things happened, or at least as far as I remember. Now, just like David, I think that this is a very hot issue. I was not contacted in Switzerland, so I did not get that letter from the Knesset, but in Switzerland so far, it has not raised any issues, but David called me from Canada about how to solve this. We cannot solve it in an ordinary session of the executive committee because Mr. Aladi is sitting there. So we have to find the means to maybe the chairman of the 12 plus, with President Cuevas Barón, or the presence of the other geopolitical groups, maybe. I don't know. There are people with more experience than I that can solve this delicate conflict. But it will certainly raise problems, and we would rather avoid such problems.
Robert, but before that, as I understood, you believe that we didn't have a formal decision at the executive committee. If we don't have a formal decision, Iran is not member of this group before the next executive committee meeting. It seems so. If we don't have a formal decision, if we talk about it, but if we didn't approve, I don't know, how is it possible? John, please.
Thank you. I understand that my colleague Ian Little-Granger, who previously was representing the UK at these meetings, expressed some considerable caution about the constitution of a group on counterterrorism by the IPU originally, and I think it was with this kind of development in mind that he actually warned that this was a dangerous path. We are now where we are, but I have to say I would very strongly share all the concerns expressed by David on behalf of Canada. We would take exactly the same view of Iran, I think, as he has already set out. Now, the UK is no longer a member of the executive committee, but I would hope that the executive committee will find a way to extract us from this position, which I think is going to do considerable damage if it continues.
Robert, please.
Mr. President, I will be very critique this working group, whatever, was created in Dhaka and the conditions that there were complicated meetings at the time, and we did not become aware of anything. It was announced to us by the Secretary General saying that, yes, we have created a small committee of high-level personalities. And why? It was not the subject of terrorism, I'm sorry. It was because we had to find, in quotes, a job for the living President, Mr. Chaudhry. We had to find activities for him, two activities at the IPU. Sorry, Margaret, that's how it went. Yes. So it was announced to the executive committee that we have something that could be nice. It's a committee and all that. So I don't remember, but as far as terrorism is concerned, Britain and France are two countries that are very much concerned every day. We fight in Sahel. There are 4,000 soldiers there fighting against terrorism. As far as experts are concerned, they know better than we do, parliamentarians, what is going on in this area. So I think the creation of this, the constitution of this working group should not get into the activities and the framework of the IPU activities first. And second, if there has to be a working group in the fight against terrorism, then we should use experts, not parliamentarians. Maybe one or two parliamentarians know well the situation, but it is the experts that should be part of that group. What can we do about this fight against terrorism? But political confrontation within IPU, between the so-called suspicious countries and the countries that are not that are accepted. Now, I'm totally against the existence of this working group. I'm just telling you what I feel. We can do nothing now. As far as Iran is concerned, I'm going to read the official release of the IPU with the minutes of the meeting, but this happens. The executive committee
of the ICLAG to include Algeria, Argentina, Colombia, and Iran, and to nominate any other member from the African group. It also authorized the president of the working group on Syria and the IPU president to conduct a mission to Syria. C'est une décision. The executive committee concluded at 6 p.m. on the 4th of February. C'est le compte rendu officiel du truc.
This is the official minutes. So officially and according to these minutes, Iran is a member. Unfortunately, well, we can challenge these minutes if we don't agree, but these are the minutes. And we also have to consider Algeria, Argentina, Colombia. I think that this is, my dear friends, IPU is getting into a very dangerous engagement, thing that we have nothing to say, nothing to do about, and we cannot do anything about it. That's my personal opinion.
I think they have not approved yet. And as I understood, there are different interpretations about what happened in the during the meeting. And so the minutes should be approved next executive committee. Second, I think it's a good example how the decisions sometimes happen inside our organization. And because the beginning of the process, it was took from whom?
Without explanation, on a été devant le fait accompli.
Well, we were put before a fait accompli. I don't know if those of you remember. They said, yes, there is this committee, the subcommittee, and the president was there, the living president is going to manage this. And then we also found two other activities for him, and everyone applauded. Great, he's going to be doing something for IPU. He will be committed to continue to work with IPU after his mandate is over. It's nice. It was a nice departure gift, but now it has become a problem to us.
If you in the XCOM don't think it was this kind of decision, then of course you have to act as the, as our chair said, and deny this this decision. So that's the only thing to do. If it is a decision, then it is.
Mm-hmm. Margaret?
Oui, je tenais.
I was, I want to speak about the usefulness of having counselors, experts, general attorneys in the armies, etc., that are much more knowledgeable about these issues than our members. That's undeniable. Now, in a reply to Robert, we should not underestimate the importance of the mandate of this working group. They should focus on the laws, legislation to be established by the parliaments in all member countries of IPU to harmonize the fight against terrorism and violent extremism at legislative level. So that's basically what it is about. It is not about managing the intelligence or army forces or police forces worldwide or at continental level. That's not the point. Now, as far as the maximum number is concerned, an information I have to give is that during that meeting on Monday 5th and Tuesday the 6th of February, more or less 10 members of the president, Mr. Chowdhury, the president was not present at the time. David had to leave during the morning. But there were about 10 of us present. And the maximum number that of participants in possible maximum number of participants in this working group was discussed, and the president elected by Dr. Al-Kubaisi of Abu Dhabi, the chairperson of this group, I did not know her. Some of you know her. She was very stern about limiting the number of participants to 15, maximum 15, no more. So this means there will be a certain conflict that will have to be sorted out between this decision that has just been read by Robert in the minutes. I have not read those minutes yet, and that decision attitude, this will of the chairperson of the group, of the working group, that there should be no more than 15 members. And to my view, this was what the members agreed at the time. And this is the information I have.
Well, just in closing, Mr. Chair, yes. From my perspective, if we began this meeting, I think, in part agonizing over whether Azerbaijan should be allowed to join the 12-plus group. Agonizing. Should we not? I will make a prediction. If the committee goes forward as is presently constituted, you will probably lose a half a dozen members of this working group, and this will become a very big story for the IPU. Iran's activities are outrageous on the terrorism front. Many of our countries are involved in prosecuting wars that involve Iranian weapons, money, leaders, movements, propaganda, social media, dark web activities. They are a very powerful actor, and the IPU will have to do something about this. If it drifts into complacency, we can do nothing about this, and Krister may very well be right. Maybe this is only something for one of us or all of us here to take to the executive committee, but I wanted to raise it and table it, because it's one thing to have Iran as a member of, say, the Working Group on Sustainable Development. It's another thing to have Iran as a member of a group on anti-terrorism. This is very dangerous, and I think it's very dangerous for the group, for IPU going forward. So thank you for your patience and for your advice.
Dear colleagues, if you agree, we made two things about it. Myself, I made talk with Gabriela Cuevas and express what we think about the issue. Is the information important to the president to deal with this matter? I will do my best. And second, the first item of agenda of the executive committee is always to approve the minutes of our last meeting. And I think that you should raise the question, and maybe we have support to change, not to change because you didn't have a decision, but to change the minutes and to have the correct correct decision about the participation of Iran inside this this group. And of course, this, the president is allowed and know what we think, and many countries are thinking about it. She will do also the what she needs to do to have the right decision inside the executive committee. Okay. Robert, please.
Précision qui, pour vous informer, c'est que...
Just one precision. This is the official minutes, and it says that the Secretary General has proposed that the meeting of this high-level committee, etc., should meet the following day, that next Monday, and... The composition of the group would be decided in March, but then the debate continued, the members took the floor, and in the end the chairperson raised the question if there was if voting was necessary or not. There was no decision made. And so it was based on the consensus that it considered the proposal of Iran, Algeria, and others was accepted. That's how it happened. So it was not very clear how this happened. At first it said it would be decided in March, and they said, do we need a vote? Don't we need a vote? Can we consider there is a consensus or not? And this just shows what happened. So the situation is very blurry.
Voilà. Ce qui montre la clarification. Et de toute façon.
Yes, of course. And but because the minutes will have to be approved, and when we are going to approve the minutes, we can ask for the minutes to be amended.
Our members.
Of course, that will entail a discussion and debate, maybe a voting, and then we will see how it turns out. It is. An issue that will raise a lot of problems. Margaret. Yes, I see how complicated this can be. We have to be prepared, and Mr. Alali will be there, the representative from Algeria as well, in the executive committee, when we will approve or not the minutes. And we have to wait and see what arguments will be used by Mr. Alali. Mr. Alali will certainly say that himself, as a person was appointed or accepted in that working group, not Iran. He's saying it is himself personally, not the country. So we have to be ready for this type of reasoning.
Mr. You need to do your job also. We go to the other matters. Someone wish to talk? To have the floor? No. So we'll finish our agenda. I need to say something. First of all, thank you for all of you for coming to Lisbon and to be available to work during all this morning with... We have a huge discussion about many issues, and I think that we are more prepared now to the Assembly. Our colleagues to the Executive Committee, we to our first meeting of the 12 plus and to the General Assembly. Thank you very much for all of you. I need to say thank you also to our interpreters. We are a little bit later and they are working. Thank you very much for your cooperation with our work. I need to say thank you also to the staff of the Portuguese Assembly, to Ana Margarida, and to all the other colleagues. They do all the best to be successful our meeting. Thank you very much. And finally, I just need to say, I think I talked with some of you, we will try next year with more time, because yesterday evening during our dinner I contacted our president and he answered this morning, is available to receive us during this afternoon. But as part of the delegations are not present, I say thank you to the president, and maybe next year with more time, and if you all know that, you will arrange the flights to be in the Palace of Belém and to be received by the President of the Republic. But I need to say thank you, of course, to our President, because he is available to receive our group. We have Robert and Christian.
No,
it is just one last word, important word, to you, to IEPU. I'm going to end my term at the Executive Committee in October, next October. That will be my last meeting after very many years of service. Still 2 years I will be a parliamentarian, so I will be around as a member of the French delegation. But I am very always concerned about the future of IPU, what will happen with IPU. And as I end my mandate, I will not run for anything again, not Senate, not anything. But I would like to speak, because people will also end their term, including the chairman. You will end your mandate as president of the, or as chairman of the 12 plus group. And there's a, the poet say that the present is the past of the future. So we are at a time when we have to think about the future, and I don't want to be worried about the future of IPU and about the 12 plus group. So my question, Chairman, I said what I'm going to be doing afterwards. What are you going to be doing afterwards, Mr. Chairman, when you end your mandate? Do you want to continue to work with us or not? If not, we have to find someone, a volunteer, to take on this role. So I'm sorry for asking you this question. I used to be a journalist, so I'm used to ask questions and straightforward questions sometimes. So do you need some time to think? Maybe not.
Now I had one thing, but now suddenly I have two. I will be short. I forgot during the Women Parliamentarians Forum to say that we are trying to recognize the Me Too movement in the IPU meetings. So we will start in Geneva, and I think that it will start with the women's meeting to put up the issue on the agenda in some way. And we are, of course, we understand that it's it could be difficult to have some result on the Geneva meeting, but we can start. And maybe we will have some sort of decision in Geneva meeting in October instead. But so you don't, I say it, so you will not be surprised when it comes on the agenda. When Robert said what he said, I thought I also need to say something. I will end my term in September. I'm going home to build up the organization in my constituency and in my municipality. And that would be interesting. But I will be with you until the 24th of September.
I will get to Funchal.
I will get there, yes, and I will be at the Nordic meeting some days later. But after that, the 24th, the new parliament is elected, and I will be looking at it instead of being involved in it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Of course, one thing that we learn in politics is that we are making friends, and the friends will still after the end of the terms. And I have friends here in Portugal from all parties, and now I say I have friends also from many different countries as well. And because friendship is something that we may build in politics, not just to fight against us, but to have bridge and to know that we are all of us are trying to serve our countries, our parties, the best we can. About the question, I'm trying to read the statutes about the questions of Robert. I'm trying to read the statutes very quickly to know if we have a limit of terms. I didn't find, but I think that renovation is important as well, because if a person is still forever, it's important also to change, because new blood, new ideas, new things. But one term is also maybe a small term to complete a job. So, if someone proposes me from the Portuguese delegation or other, I will be available to do the second term, but just a second term, and I will say that right now, not at the end of the second one.
Voilà. Bon, tout le monde propose.
Thank you very much. We'll go to the lunch in our new building. It will be a buffet, because it's more quickly, because I know that are some friends with Harry
bon,
to go to the flights.
Alors, il a accepté, finalement. Il a accepté, d'accord. Allez,
follow
on met ça au procès verbal.
Thank you very much. Only you to put the question.
C'est bon, t'as la mutuelle pression de ses amis, comme on dit.
Yes.
Absolument. Bon, ça, il faut mettre ça dans la valise, ça va être un peu plus lourd. Oula, oui. C'est bon.
Sim, para.